What is the value of memories? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today and talking about the value of memories. What are the value, or is the value, are the, what the, is the value of memories? What are the values of memory? So, what are they? What is they? The value of memory. It's an interesting thing. We think that memory is so wonderful. We think that memory is what brings to our mind all of the exciting adventures of the past. And that's one of the biggest lies we have told ourselves in our world. We think that memory regurgitates, you like that word too, huh? Regurgitates the past. And if you don't know what regurgitates means, it means to throw it up, you know. Memory regurgitates the past. Regurgitates is a very pleasant word. It's not as miserable as vomit or barf, you know. But memory brings up the past. And it brings it up in a different way. And as you can readily understand, you take beautiful lettuce and carrots and celery, and you take bread, and you take soup, and you eat it. And then, when you eat it, if you have a problem and you regurgitate it, it comes up in a different form. A totally different form. It has not that lovely, crisp form of the lettuce that you originally ate and that sort of thing. It comes up as a liquid and comes up as a puddle, you know, a putty. So, you see, that's the way memories are. When we think of memories, they're not like they originally were. We may remember some of the original emotions, but it's not the memory itself, it's the emotions that we are remembering. Now, psychologists, psychiatrists, and other people who think on these subjects may have a different point of view. And everyone is welcome to a different point of view. The Bible has as many readers in the Bible as there are points of view about the Bible. And interpretations, you might say. And of course, there are as many Bibles on earth as there are people on earth, you know, because everyone has their own Bible. Now, getting away from that, what is the value of memories? The value of memories is perhaps just one thing. It is having us think in a time other than now. Having us think in a time that is not present and not what we are enjoying right now. And do we think that's good? Do we think that's good? Not living in the now? Thinking in the past? What do scientists tell us that the time and space are here and now, you know? They tell us that time and space are here and now and that there is no past and there is no future. There's only the present. There's only the instantaneous now. And, of course, even that is not there because it's so instantaneous that we don't even know that it's there before. The minute we think about it, it's past. And the minute we think about it in the future, it's already here and then it's past already again. Now, what does all that mean? What is the value of living in memory? What is the value? Well, the value of living in memory is that it slows us down. Maybe, and of course I was going to say 1,000,000%, and of course there's only 100%, you know, we talked about that the other day. There's only 100%. So, the value of memory slows us down 100% on our inward journey of awareness of who we are, of living in the now, living in the present, and it slows us down. Now, what benefit is there for you to look at a picture of yourself when you were 3 years old? Oh, isn't that cute? You look just like every three-year-old in that period of time who was born then. And if your clothing is similar, your attitude is similar, your haircut is similar, your face is similar, you know, because you have that attitude, that the similarity of the 1920s or the 1940s or the 1980s or whenever you were created, you know. And you have that look about you. And, there's an ancient stereotype. And what is a stereotype? A stereotype is some sample, and a daguerreotype is the early photographic picture, you know. And that's just what it is. It is a copy. So when we live in the past, when we take our memories, what we're doing is we're keeping ourselves from having the exciting adventures of today. And I say to someone who I'm working with in counseling or in physical therapy, I say, come, walk to me. Oh, I can't. The doctor says I shouldn't. Everybody says I shouldn't. I can't. I don't know how. I haven't walked for a long time. I don't remember how. I said, don't think of the past. Don't think of what anybody says to you. If I say to you, walk, walk. Now, if Jesus were to stand in front of you and say, pick up your bed and walk, would you say, now, Jesus, on what authority do you speak? Jesus, do you have the background for this? Are you a medical doctor? Do you realize that if I get up and walk, I'm going to prove that I'm not dead anymore? And you realize that. And you see what I mean? We tie ourselves so to historical references of looking at things, we don't look at the present. Now, you go into the hospital, and you're sitting in the doctor's office, and you say, doctor, my arm is hurt here, I can't lift my arm. And so then the doctor, being a good psychologist, he says, oh, hey, that's great. And he says, can you lift your other arm? Oh, yeah, show me how you can lift it. Okay, now, which is the arm that you can't lift? And you start to think, which is the arm? And then the doctor says, oh, it's your right arm you can't lift. And you said it was your left arm you couldn't lift. And so then you lift your left arm, and you say, that's right, it's my right arm I can't lift. You know. And then the doctor, in the conversation again, it's like with little children, you know, they forget which leg hurts, you know. And then the doctor says, now, you said your left arm you can lift, but you can't lift your right arm, you know. And, oh, yeah, see, I can lift. And he's got you lifting both arms. You see, it's all in that memory thing. And so if you can let go of these past memories that say, I can't and I don't want to and I don't know how, you're silly. If you can't let it go, you're silly because you are holding on to the Dead Poets Society sort of thing, you know. You're holding on to these ancient things that have no place in your life. And why do we want to do that? Because it gives us a little feeling of security. It gives us a feeling of security to say, well, you know, my mother did this. And now, some of you love to read medical literature and things in medical magazines, and this is what you love about it. It says that you have these symptoms, so that's why you hurt. You were wondering why you hurt. Well, you hurt because you strained a muscle. If you were a kid of 18 and you were running track and you came home exhausted and you lay down in your bed, you might say, oh, sweetheart, what's wrong with you? Oh, dear, what's the problem? Oh, my goodness. And you say, Ma, get off my back. I just ran 3 miles of the track and I did good. And the coach says, I'm on the winning team. But, oh, I'm exhausted. Yeah, because he's not in practice. You got to keep going. Now, the next night and the next night and the next night, he'll run, and pretty soon he won't fall on the bed exhausted. He will come home and say, Mom, let's go dancing tonight. You know? And out you go. I worked for my dad in a Mason contracting business through high school and college, and I had to work as a laborer because, you know, his own kids, he gave the menial jobs to him, and he would never let us get into the journeyman type of thing. But anyhow, I carried hod. That means this thing on your shoulder that you fill with mud, that, you know, cement and mortar, and then you take it to the bricklayer, and he puts it in, and you drop it on the board, and he puddles it up. He says, there's a little more water here, then a little more sand, a little more cement, you know, whatever. And so, and then you climb up a ladder. And here you are, 17 years old, or 16 years old, or 15, or whatever I was, all those ages, I'm sure. And I'm carrying these up. And then, with my little brother, you know, here we are. He was down below, because he loved to pitch. And I was up above, because I did whatever had to be done. And so I stood up there. And he took a lath, like a roofing lath, and he put it on his hand, and then he took a brick and shoot it up to me. And so, chee, chee. So we shouted, he shouted, oh boy, his muscles were great, you know, and I caught. And of course, if I didn't catch it, it might fall down on his head. So I had to be very careful to catch it. So I caught these bricks and I piled them up there. And the masons and the lay were all so surprised that we had the bricks up so quickly because they were concentrating on their work and didn't see what we were doing. And they said, "How'd you guys get the brick up here so quick, you know?" And, well, we're magic people, you know. And, but Howie went home that evening, and he said, "Mom, my arms, oh, they ache. And I'm coming down with diabetes. I'm coming down with encephalitis, and I'm coming down, blah, 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 blah." And Mom says, "Howie, you just put in a good day's work. Now I'm going to put a little liniment on you to help the muscles so that they don't feel so achy. And you go to sleep, have to take a good bath before you, before I go to bed, I can take a bath." Yes, you take a good hot bath before you go to bed. And then you will sleep like a baby, and in the morning you'll be ready to go back to work. Oh, you know, he was a moaner. But I was up on, I had really the easy job. Just catching. But I had the worrisome job because if I didn't catch it, it was on his head. And that was the, but you see, those are memories. Now, what kind of memories? And now, is Mark, Howie going to say that he's got pains because he's getting old? We were in our teens. Is he got pains because he's getting old? Or is he got pains because it's hereditary? It's running in the family that everybody gets pains or things like that? And I read a book last night or an article in the magazine that said this here. And we see, we go back with our memories on things that have no basis for us, you know. And look, if they say diabetes runs in the family, when is it going to stop? You know, and when did it start? And who got it first? And where is it going? And you see, they put these labels on there. They put these labels on there. And isn't that fascinating? Isn't it fascinating that they say that these are things that are potential, we want to watch out for them? Well, why don't you watch out for perfect health in the now? Perfect experiences in the now. Perfect life in the now. And, you know, doctors, they say, well, you know, if you take off weight, then you're not so subject to different diseases and things. They should say, if you take off weight, you will live a long, healthy, happy life because it's just nice for your body. Your body. Well, what is your perfect weight? Did your doctor ever tell you your perfect weight? My doctor never did. He never looked at me and he says, well, now you have thick bones and you have this and you have that. You're so tall. Your ideal weight would be whatever, you know. He never said that. And I've asked him, and he never said it. And I have had two or three doctors that I've asked, you know, and they never said, now, what's your ideal weight? What's your ideal this or ideal that? And they don't think an ideal. They just say, well, you have a tendency to be fat. You have a tendency to be skinny. You have a tendency for, and hey, that's not what I'm interested in, my tendency. I want to know what my ideal is so that I can have my ideal in my mind and not as a memory, but as an ideal, which is a living, vital, dynamic ideal of who I am. Now, I say to people, you're whole and perfect. And they say, yeah, I was when I was a kid. Now you're whole and perfect. Right this minute you're whole and perfect. Right this second, right this instant, in this timeless moment of now, you are perfect. Now, think of it. Tell me, with a smile on your face, how many illnesses you got? And you can't think of it for the moment, you know. And then, you see, you're thinking. You don't have it right on the tip of your tongue. You don't have it right on the tip of your mind. You're thinking. And when you think it, you'll think it up. And if you haven't got it, you'll think some up because you want to be like everybody else with a few problems, you know. But if I say to you, what's your problem? What are you going to do with $10 million if I give it to you right now? You say, oh, I'm going to spend it. On what? I'll buy a house. I'll buy... No. What are you going to do with $10 million? Nothing. I'm happy the way I am. With $10 million, I can just continue being happy and have more gadgets, you know. And but big deal. Big deal. Is it going to make me happier? Is it going to make me feel greater, you know? And just more things that I can give away. But the big thing about all of this is live in the now. The value of memories are zilch. The value of memories are totally unimportant to us. And if we place value on memories, then that's where we're living.
Huh.
How many people's houses have you gone into and you found filled with knickknacks and memories? Mm. Pam Wangler, I go in her house, and her house, she loves angels. She just dearly loves angels. In every room of her house, she has 10 or 12 angels, little statues, you know. And some of them even have lights in them. And they're beautiful. But my goodness, what overkill. You know, I mean, maybe she's got the stories about these angels she hasn't told me, because we're always talking in the present. But all over her house, she's got angels. Angels, 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 angels. And I wonder why the puppy dogs and the cats don't knock them down sometimes as they crawl behind them and what have you. Know. But they never do, apparently. And angels, 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 everywhere. Now, if they had one beautiful angel there that they, you know, thought was pretty cool, that's nice. But they have this, they get the whole flock of angels. And to me, too many knickknacks in a house are tough. I try to stay away from them pretty much, but I don't always succeed. But knickknacks and angels and things that we have around the house, like here, here we're plant crazy. Sylvia, in her office, pushes the plants aside when she sits down at her desk. She pushes the plants aside when she sits down at a chair to read. She pushes the plants aside, and I think to myself, who owns her office? The plants, you know, not Sylvia. And you want to find Sylvia? You have to go in and push the plants aside to see if she's there. You know, she might be tucked away underneath the corner there reading a book or something, you know, or maybe taking a nap, and the plants sort of hide her. And in Ingeborg's room, you go in there, and she loves blankets. She's got blankets on the chair, blankets on the floor, blankets on the bed, and she's got these blankets for one reason. She has visitors. She has a lot of visitors in her bedroom. And they come in, and every time they come in, they want a blanket, you know. And so she takes her blanket and spreads it over the puppy dogs. And and she'd have the cats in there if we let her do that. In fact, she'd have a whole menagerie of animals in her house if we said that was okay. But that could be messy. So, you see, memories. We live in the past with every memory that we bring up. And we want to live in the present. Now, every time I think of Pamela's house, I think of angels, you know. That's not bad, not good. But the thing is, wouldn't it be wonderful if every time I thought of Pamela's house, I thought of Pam? Mm-hmm. And I thought, what a marvelous, fantastic being she is, which she is. And wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great? But you see, we get tied up by all of the paraphernalia, all of the razzmatazz. And when you look at a person's clothing and not at their eyes, then you're missing the real person. When you're looking at a person's outer appearances and not at the divine within, in the present moment, right now, the fabulous being that lives in that house right now, right this minute. That's why when we say, we're 80 years old, or we're 100 years old, or we're 10 years old, or whatever, we limit. I say 10 years old, you think, oh, so tall. I say 80 years old, and you say, oh, you know, and so forth. And right away, you got mental attitudes about these things. They're memories of what those should be. And you know, when 20 years ago, people died younger. And now, 20 years later, they're living 10, 20 years longer. And anyone who's living even longer is going to live longer, because they set the longevity rate on people at different periods of time. But we don't want to live in the past. Jesus lived until he was 30, and that was the average adult age in those days, you know. And it's not the adult age today, my goodness sakes. But memory, memory, memory. We live in the now. What do senior citizens do now? They travel the world. They dance. They go playing golf and tennis. They go out and assist on jobs. They are, so to speak, volunteers in helping people run companies and do things that their expertise has. And they don't need the money because they're retired. And they've had a good life, and now they're just going out and having fun. But, you see, they can't live in the past. Well, when I ran this company, we did it this way. They say, hey, we're in a new age. Now let's look at what the new possibilities are in the now, in the now, in the now. So, the value of memories, zilch. Have a good day. And know I love you. I love you. I love you.